Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
A new report from the Southern Education Foundation finds that the majority of children in America's public schools are now low income, a finding that has major implications for education funding and programs. Here to talk about the report and how policymakers should respond is Steve Suits with the Foundation. Well, thanks for being with us on News and Views. We appreciate your time today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Let's talk first about the report, the finding which I think some folks found startling, that we now have a majority of U.S. public school students who are actually living in poverty.
Well, you know, this trend has been going on for quite a while, and the growth of low-income students, those students who are eligible for free and reduced lunch, as measured by the Department of Agriculture and the poverty standard. These students are particularly concentrated in the southern states, and the South has been leading the nation towards this rather unfortunate goal. And this past year, recorded year, 2013, was the first year that the official statistics show that 51% of all the students in the United States public schools are low income.
I guess there's many causes, but I wondered how much of it do we know is the rising poverty rate, the effects of the Great Recession, and how much of it is some wealthier parents opting out of public schools as they have done in the past to go to private or religious schools?
The economy is by and large the largest driver for what's been happening, and it's been was accelerated by the Great Recession, although the trend has been underway at least since the 1980s. There is, in a few places, local areas, there are indications that children going to private schools, opting out of public schools, sometimes with public funds, influences this trend in local communities. But statewide and nationwide, the movement to private schools has not been a major factor in creating or fueling this trend. That's a good thing, because in our 2011 study of these trends, we looked at both public and private schools and how well low-income students were doing on the National Assessment for Education Progress, the gold standard for measuring student progress around the nation. That study found that the gap between low-income students and higher-income students in private schools was just as large as the gap in public schools. And so moving kids into the private schools would do nothing, according to the statistical analysis, for giving low-income kids a better education.
Now I'll ask you something that may seem obvious, but for the folks who are listening, what does this mean now? What's the concern? Public schools are there to educate all children. Why should we be worried that the majority of public school kids are living in poverty, other than we obviously don't want anybody living in poverty, but in terms of how our schools are doing?
Well, the low-income students are, as a group, performing at the lower levels. In other words, there's a big gap between higher-income students and low-income students in terms of, by almost every indicator of academic achievement. If you stop and think about that, what it essentially means is that now we have a majority of our students in the public schools who are performing at low levels. What that means for the students is very problematic. They face a future where they will probably achieve less educational credentials and less education than higher-income students, and that will influence their income, and that will influence their quality of life and their choices in life. But it means, more broadly, for all of North Carolina or all of the United States, that we now must find ways to improve the educational attainment of these students if the whole society at large is going to have progress in educational attainment and in quality of life. Because these students are now our majority. They're not a small minority of students who we can say, in fairness, we need to help. Well, in fairness, we do need to help them better than we've done. But more importantly, for the broader society, the whole community, the whole state is now dependent on how well these kids perform, and they're not performing as high academic achievement as we need them to perform. And so this is a question of whether we're going to have a well-educated citizenry that enjoys a high quality of life, because a community where a majority of the students perform poorly in school is not a community that will achieve a high standard of living in the next generation.
Your study comes as many states, including North Carolina now, are moving to, in the South especially, are moving to an A through F grading system for schools where the at least 80% of the grade of the school is based on a test score, not a student growth. And so there's a concern among a lot of public education advocates that schools with a high percentage of these poor students will have an F slapped on their door and will further sort of stigmatize the public school system and make it harder to improve the schools. And I wondered what your thoughts are in light of this study about that.
Well, I don't think we can judge schools by the income of the students who happen to attend it. And that's what those kind of systems do in large part. In every school, we're not just talking about a small portion of a particular state. For example, in North Carolina, while low-income students are more concentrated in the central cities, the fact is that 43% of the children attending suburban public schools in North Carolina are low income, even higher in the small towns in North Carolina. So this isn't just an isolated problem in some part of the state. It's all over over North Carolina and other parts of the state. And so what we need to do is, rather than simply say we're going to label you as either achieving or failing because of the income of the students that you have, what we're going to do is ask you to answer this question and to build a strategy of education around this question. What do low-income students need to succeed at higher levels in our school? And how do we provide it? That's the question, not a question of whether you tag a school with a letter grade because of who their students are, but a question of what do we do about the fact that we need to increase the educational achievement of low-income students.
And I guess that begs the question of how much can the school itself do, and how much of that are needs and help that students and families need before those children show up at school?
I think that's right. And you know, the tragedy in North Carolina is it was a few years back beginning to lead the South in understanding how you have to get to children's educational experiences before they reach kindergarten with its preschool programs. And those have pretty well been crippled because of budget cuts and policy decisions. And so I think for everyone who understands this problem, it is not simply something that can be dealt with only at kindergarten and through the 12th grade and only in the school building. The school policies have to go beyond that, educational policy. In some ways, Chris, you can put it down this simply. We know what it takes and what upper middle class families do for their children to succeed. And by and large, those kids are doing very well in our schools, in our public schools. If we take that simple everyday knowledge and say, okay, how do we replicate? We can't replace families, but how do we replicate the kind of educational experiences that we give upper middle class kids when they're young? And how do we help families who are in low income situations provide that kind of educational experience for their kids? And I think if we try to answer those questions, we really begin to redo this trend, which I think is a threat to the quality of life that most of the states are now enjoying and will not enjoy in the future unless we reverse this trend.
Well, let's hope that policymakers take that advice to heart. We really appreciate you, of course, doing this work and also being with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Up next, the vital role of innovation in North Carolina's economy. Stay tuned.